Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Voices from Room. On this podcast, writers, poets, activists, artists, and analysts who have contributed to Room talk about their work, themselves, and the complex problems our world faces. Room is currently open for submissions until May 5th, 2024. To submit your work and to read more, visit us online at analytic-room.com. My name is Isaac Sloan, and I'm joined by Aneta Stojnic. Hi, Aneta.
Hi, Isaac, and everyone who's listening. It is my great pleasure to introduce our guest today, Nancy Kuhl. She is the author of four collections of poetry, most recently On Hysteria, that was published in 2022, and Granite, that was published in 2021. She has studied psychoanalysis as a research fellow at the Western New England Institute of Psychoanalysis. And she is the curator of poetry for Yale Collection of American Literature at Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Yale University.
Welcome, Nancy. And most importantly, you contributed a wonderful poem to Room titled Talking Cure. And I would like to invite you to read the poem for our listeners, and maybe we can really start from there.
Thank you, Anna, and thank you too, Isaac, for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here, and yeah, it'd be a pleasure to read the poem to begin with. It's called The Talking Cure. It's in two short parts. I'll read the numbers. The Talking Cure, one. To be alive now is to take this into consideration. The bottom of breath is nearly not human. Turn sound toward meaning by force. Mouthful of gravel or moss and language, this language bloodied in pieces. Monstrous, misshapen thing. Two, worn out and nerve shot, her ache is ramble then rant, or it's a language half heard, half hearted. Her pain is a voice pulled by handfuls from the throat.
Thank you. Nancy, poetry and psychoanalysis, how did they come together for you?
Well, I've been a poet for much longer than I have been reading and thinking about psychoanalysis in an active way. So it was through my work as a curator in the Yale Collection of American Literature at the Beinecke Library, which you mentioned, that I got interested in psychoanalysis and its relationship to literary modernism, particularly in the work of the poet H.D., Hilda Doolittle, who was in 1933 Freud's patient in Vienna. And she later wrote a memoir about her experience called Tribute to Freud. And H.D.'s papers and those of her partner, Breyer, are in the collection that I steward. And so I got interested in psychoanalysis by way of trying to understand H.D.'s interest in psychoanalysis, trying to learn more about how to think about how she was thinking about it and the role it was playing in her creative process. So I sort of started there. And then I became fascinated by the way so many modernist era writers were thinking about psychoanalysis and engaging in different kinds of experiments with psychoanalysis in those early years of its development. And so that was a kind of an entry point. And then the more I learned about psychoanalysis and the more I read myself, I came to just see how many ways, interesting ways of thinking about the same things poetry and psychoanalysis kind of have. So the ways in which both of these two areas are, you know, interested in language in quite different ways, interested in patterning in quite different ways, and sometimes in the same ways. But so the more I learned about psychoanalysis, the more I could see how it was a useful tool for thinking about poetry and creativity. And then the more I learned about psychoanalysis, I also learned that poetry can be a useful tool for thinking about psychoanalytic ideas and so on. So it's a, you know, kind of self-perpetuating kind of cluster of interests, I guess.
Room sits at the intersection of psychoanalysis and many other things, and poetry is a big part of every issue. Sometimes there are poems that are explicitly psychoanalytic and talking about clinical experiences, either from a practitioner or a patient's perspective. And some poems just have a kind of resonance with psychoanalytic thinking or activism or one of the other kind of disciplines Room intersects with. Your poetry, this piece in Room, The Talking Cure, as well as some of the poems in your new book on hysteria, kind of sit right in the middle. That they are at times, if you think about it, kind of explicitly talking about psychoanalysis or something about it. But just as you think it's so explicit, it kind of fades away and it becomes a little bit more implicit and sort of not so on the nose or something like that. I don't know if that's something you thought about in this collection or just kind of how your writing developed around this.
I think both things are true. I think, I wrote these poems over a pretty long period of time, and was studying psychoanalysis at the Western New England Psychoanalytic Institute with really tremendous and wonderful thinkers and teachers there, and my classmates were wonderful. And so the more I wrote and thought about things, I think the more I kind of came to see different ways I might, over time, might change my approach or moderate those two different kinds of points that you're talking to. So I guess my interest in the kinds of ways in which psychoanalysis in the context of writing these poems, and I'm thinking about the kinds of all the other things that are happening in these poems, all the other this poem that I just read and others in my book on hysteria. They're kind of, I wrote them in a period when I was really preoccupied with studies on hysteria, Freud and Breuer's work in that period. And so the poems I was writing, even if I wasn't, thinking consciously about tackling some of those ideas, the poems are preoccupied with them in that way too. And the same ideas that I was struggling with or fascinated by and wanted to keep kind of turning in my mind, appear and reappear in that way through the work. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And it reminds me actually of the way clinicians, psychoanalytic clinicians, often practice, where there is this kind of a heavy learning period, theoretical kind of study. And then in the room, that kind of is there, although it fades away in terms of the practice and isn't something that's going to be applied like methodically in the session.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of a great way to think about, I think, the poems that I was writing that I've written in this book. And I'm not a casual reader of Freud. I'm a pretty serious reader of psychoanalysis, and have read quite a lot. But with that said, I'm not a scholar. I'm not a practitioner. I'm not trying to be a historian of this period or this work. But all of it is there, all that work I've done thinking and reading and talking with really smart people who know quite a lot more about this than I do. It's all, kind of in the background or on the ground, in the foundation for the work I was doing in this period, I think. I think that's a kind of a really apt metaphor between those two things, between the writing of thing and the kind of way in which you enter a room with all that knowledge in your background.
Well, one of the things that really kind of like bring together poetry and psychoanalysis and the way that we listen to poetry and that the way that we listen to the material in psychoanalytic session, where we're not really listening for the manifest content, right? The words are just there to express something that is the unconscious material, and that's what we're listening for. And poetry works pretty much in a, at least to my ear, poetry works pretty much in the same way.
Yeah, it certainly can, and I'm very interested in and feel that writing poetry can be a kind of interesting way to experiment with the ideas of what is the relationship between the like conscious thinking and unconscious motivations and unconscious ideas and feelings, and how do those things express themselves kind of in the tangle of of metaphor or of the, you know, kind of relationships in sound and patterning in sound. So yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it.
I hope you wouldn't mind me asking this. Did you have any personal experience with psychoanalysis other than the scholarly one?
Oh yeah, yes, I had a lengthy analysis during the same period when I was studying.
I'm curious whether how do you see those processes? Like, how did that impact, if at all, your process of poetry writing?
It's hard to say how to pull. It's hard for me to think about how to pull all those threads apart. The way I've thought about it over time is that, you know, there's all these different kinds of overlaps of you know, kinds of thinking and processes and you know, thinking about creativity through the training I was doing, the courses I was taking in at the Psychoanalytic Institute, and the ways that was helping me think differently about meaning making and about how ideas are things that are made. I think it's Ogden who points that out, says, you know, I made an idea is a, in some ways more apt to thing to say than I had an idea. I never thought that way about all the different processes of a mind. You know, I thought a lot about creative process and creative practice in a very specific, bounded kind of way. I mean, I hadn't understood that it was bounded until I came up against the you know, the boundaries. And being in analysis, there's so much room for that kind of experimentation with thinking about ideas and struggling with them. And ideas I might also include and should also include dreams and memories and habits and all of those different ways that those different modes of thinking, if that's what they, if we were to think about them that way, that, you know, it being at a time, at this time in my life, like writing these poems, studying pretty intensively with scholars and practitioners, reading deeply, thinking all the time about Freud and those texts, and then talking about those things and everything else in my own analysis, was it just like a very rich and dynamic time in my life. And it felt creative in a, like a kind of global way of thinking about all the different ways we make meaning. Generative is another word I might use to talk about that. You know, no one has ever asked me about all that tangle before. It's like the first time I've ever talked about this out loud.
You know, as you were talking about it, I thought of, I think it's a kind of Bionian idea about making the conscious unconscious and allowing us to dream. And it's a little bit different than the idea that in making an interpretation, what's unconscious comes into consciousness. But, you know, I think there's a way in which some of what you're talking about with the idea of being in an analysis and studying it from a scholarly perspective, but also having this kind of channel for creativity through poetry, is a kind of reminder of that this kind of expansiveness and Annetta, some of what you were talking about in terms of getting away from the manifest meaning and listening to the words as they resonate in other ways, seems very much to do with the idea of making something that's conscious, more unconscious, more dreamable, more flexible, and creative.
You know, I think what I thought about as you were saying that is this other channel that I mentioned, but that was all, you know, that's also kind of going on at the same time, which is my work as a curator of literary archives and the ways in which thinking in a more psychoanalytic way and taking a more psychoanalytic approach to thinking about how life stories are told, how meaning is made at that kind of level. And the movement between those things is very much this kind of what you're talking about, you know, kind of moving in and out of consciousness and unconsciousness somehow. And the ways that overlap just kind of gives a new perspective. It offers a new perspective. So that includes, you know, being able to see into the experience of writers in psychoanalysis decades and decades ago, by way of their writings about their experiences, just adds this layer of dream, like you say, to kind of the imagination of the experience of HD writing to Breyer about her first session with Sigmund Freud. And, it does allow this kind of flexibility in thinking about what, because she talks in it's a wonderful letter, and she talks about all these different things that happen in this hour. They stand back to back to see which one of them is taller. She talks about just falling to pieces for a moment and being very, like weeping at the intensity of the experience. And it's, it's very moving to be able to kind of have a view into that experience. And it's in real time. She's writing immediately after having left her session to Breyer about this experience. And yeah, so that's another layer that I think is important too, the ways that trying to have a historical view is another kind of imaginative channel. I don't know if that, I feel like I kind of wandered off from your question.
Well, isn't that what we always do?
Thinking, yeah.
Isn't that how it works? Well, given your vast interest in and in deep research in psychoanalysis, I'm curious, how did you choose hysteria? Why hysteria? Why now?
Yeah. I feel like it's probably Studies on Hysteria. It was one of the first books I read when I got interested in psychoanalysis and started to try to read on my own. And then, as you know, reading these, maybe you have the same experience, reading these texts, it's there's so much one wants immediately to talk to someone else about and to try to sort out the ideas and thinking through. And so reading them in conversation, reading these essays in conversation, this book, I just, the ideas are so resonant to me about how we make all the different ways we make meaning. Like you were saying, in terms of you're listening for all different kinds of content, and we make meaning in and out of language in all kinds of ways in a conversation and in every context. But in these cases, I'm just fascinated, I remain fascinated by the ways these women kind of create symptom languages, to kind of work out, express something that can't otherwise be expressed. And, I feel like it just was so recognizable to me as a kind of way of thinking about metaphor and way of imagining metaphor in and out of language, in the body, as well as in words and ideas. And yeah, just it's so fascinating to me. I kind of can't get to the bottom of it. It remains really compelling to me. Whether or not it's resonant in the moment, I think there's a lot to say about different ways of thinking about hysteria in our really complicated time. I'd be interested to hear what you two think about that, really, and how your field is thinking about right now.
Well, I'm actually thinking you have an epigraph, and it's two quotes, one from Freud at 1895 in Studies on Hysteria. He says hysterics suffer mainly from reminiscences, and then from Adam Phillips in Becoming Freud 2014, critics of the family were called hysterics. And there's something about room is focus on analytic action. How can psychoanalysis not only help the individual, but help our world through a form of activism, a specific kind of activism? And, I think part of what Freud was doing and Adam Phillips was doing, as you were saying, kind of giving language to these symbolic languages that their patients, were demonstrating and bringing into these sessions. And I think in those two quotes, there's something about the kind of human and advocating for the humanness of what could otherwise be very much pathologized. And so that's part of how I think about it. It certainly in terms of our conversation today. But in your poem, the talking cure starts, to be alive now is to take this into consideration. And it is a kind of call to action and call to awaken around what it means to be a person, which is very much what I think our field tries to do. Alert us to what it means to be human and all of the different kinds of symbolic languages we have for coping with that.
I love that reading of that line. I think that the ambiguity of that now is of interest to me because it's so flexible, right? I'm talking about at least in part the Fraulein Anna O and her case, right? So there's that present tense, and there's all the present tense of readership in the moment that one is reading. And the present tense of my work making the work. So there is a kind of continuous multiple present tense in that now that interests me. That's very much in line with what you're talking about, like what it means to be alive in the world, right? I mean, I say that as if every moment isn't multiply in various time frames, right? Any of our thinking could be excluded from so many other parts of like that any moment in time could be excluded from its relationship to other moments in time. So it's not a unique thing that I'm, kind of pointing out in this poem. It's very much part of what you're talking about, kind of how we can think about that multiplicity and that and action in that context too, I think is a meaningful thing to add in there.
Yeah, action in a very direct, embodied sense. Also, what it means to be alive in the world and what it means to be alive in the body.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a way that this poem for me is about talking and about listening. And the two parts are kind of aligned a little bit that way. I mean, that's reductive maybe, or simple or oversimplified, but it's kind of part of it. And the kind of perspective of the two sections is slightly different. It's not really clear who's speaking in the first section. But whoever's speaking in the second section is observing someone else. So there's this kind of shiftiness in all of that for me. That's really quite interesting. But yeah, always coming back to the kind of articulation is always a thing that's happening in a body or through a body, right? That language is necessarily that speech necessarily includes this action of articulation.
I really like the shiftiness that you're referencing in that talking about it, this poem in Room, where kind of like, you're not really sure who is speaking, at which moment, and it does really convey something of how analytic situation is and works, because there is a certain experience of co-creation in the moment. Where, in a way, every session is a form of writing together.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, it's a tremendously collaborative endeavor. The kind of that conversation and everything that's made in that conversation is has multiple authors, right? And I think that's I think that's really apt. And it's a kind of experience. In the experience, it's kind of bewildering and sometimes frightening or kind of a little unsettling and sometimes really enlivening and kind of exciting. But yeah, that's the way that and language is so much a part of the toolkit for that experience. Like so much of it is obviously much is taking place in other kinds of communication. There's so many other ways that things are being exchanged, but language is so much a kind of part of that and such an important part of it. That it makes sense to me to kind of to pay attention, in the work of writing poems in a different or in a similar kind of way, right? Like, I guess writing poems is an activity, a way of thinking, or a process that requires a certain kind of attention. And so I found writing about psychoanalytic ideas in this way and kind of all the other things that I'm writing about at the same time, certainly I'm writing about family and in the rest of the book and many other things, that the language is like the poem is a way, provides a perspective that's really different and opening and interesting in that way. And I'm sure there are lots of ways to think about a psychoanalytic exchange that are similarly perspective shifting and all of that.
Yeah, I guess I'm finding myself wondering what it was like coming from a poetry background and then entering a scholarly study of psychoanalysis, where some of the papers are, some of what you read is quite harder to get into. And sometimes that difficulty is warranted and there's a intense payoff when you're able to kind of get with the language and the, specific terminology, and other times it can be very off-putting and sort of harder to get through and get with.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you mean. and yeah, I mean, it was an education, like that period of doing all that reading and working in those classes. It was an education, a lot of different things. I learned a lot of different things. Something that is obvious, but maybe worth stating plainly, is that, I'm not a clinician. I've never been a clinician. I only have access to information about casework from either what's been written or what I could learn from my classmates and instructors in classes. That is like the only access I have to hearing about that experience from the perspective of the analyst, or hearing how different minds are working. I have access to mine, my mind, and like what I could learn about it from my analysis and from thinking about my analysis in the context of doing all this reading. But other than that, that was the thing I couldn't get anywhere else. So yeah, it's very worth working through the tough sledding of the, sort of theoretical apparatus of an article to have that access to the what's happening in the case. For me, it was because I can't otherwise understand, it's like very difficult to otherwise get that experience. I don't know if I've said that in a way that makes sense, but that was part of the work of doing all that reading over all that time, was that kind of just developing my own landscape of what might be happening in analysis, kind of thinking generally about it, not having any other view than my own, than my own perspective from my one experience.
Sounds like your interest in analysis really shifted your creative process as a poet. Given you started by saying how you were a poet long before you got interested in analysis, but it sounds like analysis really shaped it.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, that's really, really true. And I mean, and like my view of creativity was shifted completely. I feel like I just came to think so differently about making meaning than I had before. And it's not as if I hadn't thought about language and metaphor and making meaning. I thought I had already given that a lot of consideration, but the perspective is just different enough and includes enough of the same kinds of interest in idiom and specificity of expression in speech and voice, the idea of voice. And some of those things were very, very familiar to me when I started reading and thinking and talking with people about how psychoanalysts were thinking about those terms. So there was a, you know, a kind of real opening of like things I had thought I had given a lot of, I'd had a lot of time to think about and understood in particular ways, came alive to me in very new ways. So yeah, I feel like I owe a lot to the experience of thinking, of just having that time to spend talking and thinking with these wonderful my classmates and teachers about the processes of the mind, you know, just like sort of in a very curious, open, you know, experimental kind of thinking way, you know, without feeling that they're like my not knowing where we were headed all the time, you know, because I really didn't know the field. I didn't understand, you know, it was like I was learning all of that stuff in a way that, you know, at least the people I was in classes with, they were all practicing clinicians. They already had a lot of experience as clinicians. So even though they were maybe reading some of the texts we were reading for the first time, just as I was, they had this whole other universe of experience, you know. And my universe of experience and understanding was like adjacent in a way that was great for me. I mean, I feel like there the whole, you know, there were lots of moments where people are like, "What is it you're doing here again? What is your interest in this all again?" Because, you know, it's like a lot of classes, you all know, you're familiar with the you know, kind of intensity of those classes and the training and the, you know, I going to do this work after a full day of doing other work and, you know, all of those details. A lot of people just were kind of really like not sure what I was up to. And you know, I wasn't entirely sure either, right? So I couldn't just say like, oh, well, when I started taking classes at the Institute, I was working on an exhibition about this these writers, psychoanalysis and literary modernism, as a kind of subject of an exhibition at the library where I work at the from the archives. So I started off with a really like I wanted to understand these ideas better because they would help me understand these writers and these texts differently and read their archives differently. And all of that was true. But then, you know, years went by. I had that exhibition happened and I kept wanting to read more and talk more and study more. And so then it was, yeah, then it was a kind of unfolding. Like I didn't really have a project that I was working on that I could say with certainty. I understood what its dimensions were. But yeah, so it was a, I feel like the education committee at the Psychoanalytic Institute kind of took a chance on me, and I'm very grateful for that. And I remain very, very grateful to everyone I worked with there for their indulgence, you know, to invite me into this work was, I know, not, it's not a common experience. I don't really remain really thankful that for the generosity of that community.
Another person in that situation, I could easily imagine would develop an interest in becoming a clinician, but you really wanted to use this experience in service of poetry. That's also quite unique.
You know, Amanda, I love my work as a curator, and I don't have any interest in leaving it, you know? So yeah, there were moments where I thought like, if I'm gonna do all these classes, like I should really be sure I don't want to do them with, like if there's any chance I might one day want to do this as a you know, as a career or do this work, I should probably take a path that would lead me to being able to do that in some kind of way. And but I, you know, when I thought about that question and like looked long and hard at it, I just didn't want to, you know, I'm fascinated by it, but I didn't want to not do the work I'm doing in favor of doing something else. And the, you know, I just feel like all of these things we're talking about were so compatible for me and so enriching to one another for me that it didn't, yeah, it was like I said, it was due to the generosity of that community that I was able to you know, kind of have the opportunity to find my way to this book that I wrote of the book of poems I wrote, you know, which I couldn't have set out. I couldn't have said, oh, I'm gonna do the, you know, I'm gonna take some classes and then write a book about this experience. It didn't work that way for like it unfolded in different ways and moved forward and back in different ways. It wasn't a, you know, a kind of a clear line. I didn't really know what I was doing until I had almost finished it, you know. So there's all of that.
Well, Room has published, and Aneta and I have talked to many clinicians, ourselves included in this category, who have these kinds of interests and projects and lives outside of the field that have these kinds of reciprocal relationships. And as Aneta said, you coming from curation and poetry, and then finding this interest. It has this kind of reciprocity in this other way. And I'm just thinking about moments in this episode today where we've kind of wondered, did we say that right? Is that how we want to say that? Did I say what I mean? What I say make sense? And we call from these other places to get closer to saying what it is we feel we mean. And conveying it to each other and building on each other by way of the explicit vernacular, the language that we have from our respective fields and disciplines, but also just by way of the experiences we've had and the ways in which we've kind of pursued and I don't know, allowed ourselves to grow within the holding environment of the I don't know, our particular pursuits.
Yeah, that's so well said. I feel like that's really, and it includes the work that you all do with Room, the editorial work and the, kind of collaborative process of putting together the magazine and the many other activities around the magazine that I know you all host, the events that you host and this podcast series and all of those things that are collaborative and multiply authored, but also include your individual ideas and your individual contributions and all of that too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts and your words and your poetry with us.
Thank you.
A real pleasure for us too, and wonderful to have more poetry on the podcast.